Welcome to the Just Raise podcast. Today, we are talking about how to onboard the next billion users into crypto. Our guest today, our first repeat guest, is Andy Bromberg, CEO of Eco. Andy has been in the crypto space since 2014 with the founding of the Stanford Bitcoin Club. Then last year, he raised $26 million from Andreessen Horowitz, and 3 months later, another $60 million for Eco. We dive into stablecoins, creating a new currency, and how crypto can take over the traditional financial system. I hope you enjoy this episode with Andy Bromberg, CEO of Eco. If you listen to this show, you know that startups always need great talent. But getting the perfect fit is hard and time-consuming, which is why Marketer Hire uses cutting-edge AI and in-house teams of seasoned recruiters to find your perfect marketing professional fast. Sign up today and get matched at marketerhire.com. Andy, well, it is fantastic to have you on the show. Again, I had you on the show back in the early Just Raise days before I joined Workweek. To kick us off, can you tell us what Eco is?
Yeah, sure thing. And thanks for having me back. I enjoyed the first episode and the second one even better now with Workweek. Eco is, it's not a bank. What we're building is a better product, a better place for you to save, spend, send, and make money all in one single place. And what we've recognized is that banks are underserving people right now. They aren't giving people the benefits that they want or need. And we also all use a dozen different financial apps to manage our money. So our money's in every single different place you can imagine. It's impossible to keep track of. And the answer is a single, compelling, rewarding place for you to do everything in your financial life that rewards you more than any other product out there and allows you to compound the gains of getting benefits from everything you do, from saving to spending to paying bills, all in one single place. What's really interesting about Eco beyond that is that, well, that's a really good consumer value proposition that creates a better place for people to put their money, which is what people are looking for right now in today's environment. We have a couple pieces on top of that that make it even more interesting. One of them we put front and center when we talk to people, which is Eco Points. And what we're building is what we call the world's first open rewards currency. Basically coming with this idea that reward systems today, like Amex points and Chase points, American Airlines miles, and all these reward systems are pretty fundamentally broken. They're walled gardens, and those introduce really bad incentives for how these programs are managed. And we're trying to create a new and open rewards currency built on top of this consumer financial product. So that's one big thing that we could talk a whole lot more about that's important. The other thing that's worth mentioning that I'd be remiss to mention to your audience, although we don't say this as publicly, is that Eco is, a lot of what we do is built on crypto rails. So the reasons we're able to offer such compelling benefits, we can dig into the details here, are because we lean on crypto rails in a lot of ways. And what we've built is effectively first ever bridge, real bridge for the mainstream to cross over and use crypto. But we actually don't advertise crypto all over the place on our site because most people don't really want that. And so that's part of how we offer what we're able to offer, even though it's not something we necessarily kind of throw in people's faces.
I love Eco because it's a neobank, like typical finance in the front, a savings account, and on the back, it's crypto infrastructure, which is really interesting in both the crypto infrastructure, but also that you're using that strategy to onboard all the users that really don't like NFTs, or at least don't have an opinion on it. But you're tapping into the whole crypto backend. Can you talk a little bit about how that works? And then would love to circle back to rewards.
Yeah, sure thing. And it is just one note on what you just said. We joke about it sometimes that the holy grail of crypto that everyone's been looking for a decade now is a bridge for the mainstream. What gets the next billion people to use this technology? And the holy grail for fintech products is getting people to convert their paycheck into your product. If you get people to move their paycheck from their traditional bank account to your product, you've won. That's the holy grail in fintech. And our approach has kind of been like, why not both? I think we can actually do both of those at the same time and achieve that fintech holy grail and get people to treat Eco as their primary account where their paycheck goes. And in so doing, actually achieve that kind of crypto holy grail and get people to on-ramp to crypto in a really smooth way.
Holy Grail Squared sounds like a pretty profitable business in the long run.
Holy Grail Squared. Yeah, if it works out, it's good. And I do think it's, in one sense, when I say that, it sounds a little bit ludicrous, like you're claiming to solve two Holy Grails at the same time. Like, this is a ridiculous thing to say. But the point I would make is that it's not that we're kind of like saying that we're going out and independently solving these two Holy Grails of industry. It's actually that the answer is combining them. Mm-hmm. It's that the way to convince people who are well-banked to leave their bank and go and use an alternative financial product actually requires that you offer them benefits that are so good they can only be offered by building on top of crypto rails. So it's not that we've gone out and kind of independently solved what are seen as two incredibly hard problems in these spaces. It's that we've looked at those two problems together and said, actually, by putting those together, that's how you build a product that solves that for people.
And that is what technology is supposed to do, right? Technology used well, plus, market shifts, unlocks massive new business opportunities that make fundamentally like bringing in consumers easier or bringing on new business easier. And that's what startups are all about.
Exactly right. It's exactly right.
So to go a little high level here, what is the thesis for Eco? It sounds like we're starting to dive into it, but where does Eco fit into the market?
Eco fits into the market in suggesting that we are at an incredible, and we would argue generational, confluence of tailwinds in the market. And the way we usually think about this is that we have kind of economic, social, and technological tailwinds behind us that are all converging to create a multi-generational moment. That is the thesis of Eco. And our mission is to put your money back to work for you. That's what we are trying to do, is make it so that your money that you own, your wealth that you own, is working for you, not working for other people. And the opportunity to do so is because of this intersection of these tailwinds. So what do I mean by that? Well, economically, we are seeing negative real yields for the first time since the 1970s. People are losing purchasing power, leaving money in their bank account. Inflation is outpacing savings rates. And most of the time, people feel incredible inertia with their money. They don't really care where their money is. They don't move it to different places. But when this happens, when you are losing purchasing power, leaving money in your bank account, which you are today, people look for alternatives. And the last time this happened was in the 1970s. And we saw a huge boom of financial products, money market funds, cash management accounts, credit card boom. All of that happened in the 70s. Basically because of this, because people were looking for alternatives because passbook checking accounts weren't doing the trick anymore. And so we've got that tailwind. And then from a social perspective, trust in large institutions is plummeting. And you can, there's a million statistics for this, but people are trusting institutions less and less. So what that means is people are looking for an alternative for their money, and they're willing to consider upstart alternatives for the first time. They're willing to consider kind of non-institutional offerings for the first time. And then technologically, building what Eco is could only happen now. And I mean that in two ways. First of all, the crypto rails that we're leaning on have really only existed for the past few years. So it's new technology. But even fintech, we work with all sorts of fintech partners to provide the services that we do. Bill pay partners, card issuance partners, banking as a service partners, all of these pieces of infrastructure, those have only existed recently. And so it's only with all of these things happening at once that people are looking for alternatives for their money. They're willing to consider upstart alternatives, and the technology exists to build what Eco is. Can this come into being? And we think that's a generational opportunity. And it's what allows us to then seek to fulfill the mission of putting your money back to work for you. So that's how it all comes together into that thesis and mission.
So to dive into the mechanics a little bit, how does Eco work on the back end on crypto rails?
Yeah, so when we say crypto rails, it's important to distinguish that, at least for today, when we talk about crypto at Eco, we are talking about stablecoins and not the algorithmic stablecoins like Terra USD that have been in the news recently, but collateralized, fully collateralized stablecoins. We use USDC, which is issued by the Center Consortium, which is started by Circle and Coinbase and is a collateralized stablecoin. And the way to think about stablecoins, and I'm sure people listening to this are aware of stablecoins and have looked at them, but my mental model for stablecoins is that they are, to date, one of the most efficient payment systems to move dollars around or any currency that they're pegged to. It's a super efficient, super fast, super low fee way to move dollars. And what that enables is unlocking a whole bunch of opportunities for money movement efficiently on the back end. And so when users deposit into Eco, their funds are either held in dollars or converted into USDC, this dollar-backed stablecoin, which then allows us to move their money around much more quickly and access different opportunities on behalf of that user. And so that's when we talk about building on crypto rails, that's the primary kind of use case that we're talking about.
Can you tell us a little bit about how stablecoins work, both the ones you use and the algorithmic ones like Terra and Luna, which just suffered a coordinated attack that destroyed like $29 billion worth of value?
Yeah, absolutely. So at some level, it feels almost unfair to bucket some of these things into the same categories because they accomplish similar functions when they work. They're built very different mechanistically. The way to think about kind of collateralized stablecoins, or what people call fiat-backed stablecoins, is that if you were issuing a stablecoin, you know, kind of Joe Coin was a stablecoin, I could come to you and I could say, hey, Joe, here's $5. And I give you the $5 and you give me back 5 Joe coins. And you just hang on to the $5, you know, do stuff with $5. $5 is sitting there in an account. And I can now move these Joe coins around. I can send them around to other people. But at any point, anyone can come back to you with a Joe coin and say, here's my Joe coin. I would like a dollar back. And because you kept those $5 in the account, you can give them a dollar back. And so there's always kind of a matching amount of dollar collateral for Joe coins or these kind of dollar backed stable coins around. And that means that that Joe coin is always going to be worth a dollar. So I can always go back and exchange it for a dollar. You can almost think of it kind of similar to like a Venmo balance, right? If I have a $200 balance in Venmo, it's because there's $200 sitting there in a Venmo bank account somewhere. I can send you $10 on Venmo. Now I have $190, you have $10, but there's still $200 in the account somewhere. And either one of us can go back and say, hey, I want to exchange my Venmo balance for dollars and get dollars back out. And so that's fiat collateralized stablecoins are basically Venmo balances on the blockchain. That's basically how they work. I'm simplifying a little bit there, but at a high level, that's effectively how it works. Then there are a bunch of other varieties of stablecoins. And these are algorithmic stablecoins or alternatively collateralized stablecoins. And what those are is it's a huge class of tokens that are intended to be always worth $1 or whatever they're pegged to, but they have other mechanisms for making sure they're always worth a dollar. And these are kind of economic or game theoretic mechanisms that intend to keep them worth a dollar, but with way less certainty, right? At the end of the day, if you can't guarantee that there's always going to be a dollar available when you want to trade the stablecoin back in, there is some risk there. And so those are alternative. Now, the upside of those non-collateralized, non-fiat-backed stablecoins is that they're, in a sense, more capital efficient, right? Because the fiat collateralized stablecoins aren't super capital efficient. You have to put a dollar in for every one that you issue. So you're locking money up. It doesn't really do anything other than enable you to move that money around more efficiently. These algorithmic or uncollateralized or undercollateralized stablecoins are often more capital efficient, but that comes with risks. And so those are some of the trade-offs you end up having to make. I'm happy to talk about some of the mechanics of some of those, including Terra USD or Luna. But I do think that there's a important, pretty bright line between fiat-backed stablecoins and non-fiat-backed, under-collateralized algorithmic stablecoins.
And Eco is fundamentally built on stablecoins because what you have that no one else has is dollars, like consumer dollars for people that are not necessarily in Web3. You tap an entirely different source of dollars than everyone else. It's not just the Coinbase folks or the people who have multiple wallets, MetaMask or otherwise. It's someone living a totally normal non-crypto life who also uses Eco as a savings account. You bring in dollars there, you convert them to USDC, which is inherently collateralized because you're giving dollars for it. And now you now have USDC that you can lend out to people who are trying to work in DeFi and all these other platforms that need dollars to operate, just to balance the books and do some of the other more complicated trades they're doing.
Really importantly, what I would say is that we have now, once that happens and the user has moved into USDC, we've on-ramped that person to crypto. And we're giving them benefits that are straightforward and simple and dollar denominated and all of that. And their holdings are pegged to dollars, which is great. We've now onboarded them to crypto. And that now gives us an opportunity to increasingly take them steps further into crypto. We've kind of made the leap, right, from a pure fiat life to now actually kind of using crypto rails for that person. And we can now start to introduce more and more for them over time. You know, we haven't shipped things like this yet, but it makes total sense to then allow people to do things like buying other crypto assets, right? They're now partially in the space, can use that to kind of on-ramp them steadily more and more to additional features and get deeper into the space. And that's some of where we're going next.
Can you talk a little bit about why these high yields exist in crypto and why they haven't just been arbitraged away as they would be in the traditional finance system?
Yeah, so there's really significant demand for these dollar-denominated stablecoins in crypto. The space is just effectively kind of under-dollarized. There's massive demand for dollars in crypto for all sorts of purposes. And there's tons of borrowers of these dollars from kind of participants in the crypto markets that need dollars and are willing to borrow at a premium to access certain markets, whether it's miners. Crypto miners are a really big borrower. I think one interesting point to mention there or think about is that if you're a Bitcoin miner, you run, you know, a server farm that mines Bitcoin, that's your job. You have expenses to pay in dollars. You have to pay electricity and rent and salaries and all this stuff. You have expenses to pay in dollars, but your revenue is in Bitcoin, right? Your mining proceeds are in Bitcoin. And so miners are really big borrowers of dollars to kind of bridge that gap, allow them to pay their expenses in dollars while they get paid in Bitcoin effectively. And so that's a big source of borrower demand. But at the end of the day, there's just massive demand for dollars in the space and not enough dollars to go around in the space. Part of the reason for that is that the space is crypto space writ large is remains quite inefficient. There are massive opportunities for sophisticated traders and participants in the ecosystem if they have enough access to capital to be able to seize those opportunities. And so because of these remaining kind of inefficiencies of a relatively immature space, there's a lot of demand for additional dollars to then go and access those opportunities.
Is some of that because when you're trading, let's say, Ethereum for another token, Uniswap, and then that for a Maker token, you're trading between three or four, six different digital assets. And at some point, you need dollars in the system to balance out, to allow people to cash out effectively on these exchanges. Like, where does it break down where like the dollars are fundamentally needed? Who's using them?
Yeah, there's a bunch of places that the dollars are needed. One of them is miners, as I was just talking about. Another one is people needing dollars. So one thing to be aware of is that, let's say you bought a crypto asset and it went up in price pretty significantly, right? So now you're sitting on paper gains, but you actually don't want to sell that asset because if you sell that asset, you're going to crystallize the gains and pay taxes on the gains. That's a painful position to be in. But you do want to make a bet on something else. Well, one way to do that is to borrow dollars against your holdings of that asset and then use the dollars to invest in something else. So if you've owned Bitcoin for a long time, you know, Bitcoin is not up in the past week, but you know, Bitcoin, you bought it at $5,000 a couple of years ago, and now all of a sudden it's, you know, $30,000. Well, you may not want to sell that in order to buy Ethereum or whatever it is that you want to bet on now, but you can borrow against your Bitcoin, get dollars, and then bet on Ethereum. And so that's a very common use case for it as well. And then there's this whole evolution of DeFi, decentralized finance. There's all these protocols, tons of arbitrage opportunities between protocols, ways to yield farm these protocols and see upside. And it just requires capital to put to work to be able to do so. And lending stablecoins at high rates, even with these high rates, it's still enough for these sophisticated actors to then make real profit, you know, using those dollars or those dollar-denominated stablecoins for other purposes.
What happens if you get margin called or like the whole market kind of gets margin called. So if, you know, you have $1 million in Bitcoin, you take out 250K to invest in Ethereum, but then Bitcoin and Ethereum crash and together you have $500,000 now and you also owe $250,000 to someone in dollars. What happens there?
Well, I mean, it's the same as traditional markets, right? Like that's exactly how it works. And what that means is loans in crypto are very often super over-collateralized. Once they hit a certain collateral ratio that is still more than over-collateralized, you get called and either liquidated or need to add more collateral. And so it works just like traditional markets, tons of volatile markets where this stuff happens. People get wiped out sometimes. It happens, but you know, sophisticated lenders are vigilant about making sure that systems are set up so that they aren't the ones losing money. It's the borrower who decided to, you know, borrow in a risky way that ends up holding the bag.
As you may have heard, I'm a big fan of what Marketer Hire is doing to make it easy for startups to find marketing talent. Getting the right marketing professionals takes way too long for ambitious businesses. But using advanced AI and in-house vetting, Marketer Hire makes finding your perfect match so much faster. You'll have access to elite freelance marketing professionals ready to work as little or as much as you need. Sign up today or get matched with a no-risk trial at marketerhire.com. Pivoting a little bit, you have a pretty amazing story. Before you started Eco, you were the co-founder of CoinList. And I think before that, you were probably one of the earliest users and holders of Bitcoin. Can you tell us how you got into the crypto space?
Well, I appreciate you saying that. I wish I was. I was definitely not one of the earliest users and holders of Bitcoin. There's always people that are earlier than you. I got super lucky. When I was at university, I had this professor named Balaji Srinivasan, who was a professor at the time, ended up being a general partner at Andreessen Horowitz, and then founded a company called Earn.com, and got bought by Coinbase. He was the CTO of Coinbase, and now is just kind of a genius on Twitter, and investor, and founder.
Prophet.
Prophet, yeah,
of all
exactly.
Things Bitcoin, yeah.
Yeah, and the world. But he was a professor of mine at the time, and this was 2012, and he convinced a bunch of us that Bitcoin was going to be important. I wish I could take credit and say, I saw the future. I knew this was going to be massive right away. Like that was, you know, I saw it. It was him pounding the table and telling us, hey, Bitcoin is going to be a big deal. Here's why it's important. And he convinced seven of us to start the Stanford Bitcoin group in 2012, 2013. And so we were, yeah, back then studying Bitcoin, doing a bunch of academic research on it, advocacy work, going and kind of explaining Bitcoin to people, building projects. That group has gone on to do really awesome things. But that was how I started. And, you know, at that point, it was really just Bitcoin. It wasn't crypto. It was Bitcoin. There were, you know, a dozen altcoins out there at that point, but it wasn't like a full ecosystem. And so, you know, did that. And then I left school, started a company in the political media space called Sidewire. And then after that, started CoinList in 2017. And CoinList is a platform where the best companies, best digital asset projects run their token sales, and an exchange and lending platform and staking platform, governance platform, all sorts of things now. And that business is doing really amazing. We spun out from AngelList in 2017 and built that. And then in 2020, I came over and took the reins at Eco, and have been running Eco for the past just over a year and a half now, just building this business.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that you were there so early. And also that Balaji has just been pounding the table and convincing people to join for over a decade at this point.
Oh, yeah.
How did you actually come to start Eco? What's the story there? Like, what was the spark where you were like, this needs to exist, as opposed to one of the hundreds of other crypto companies you could have started at that point?
So Eco is a really interesting founding story, a little bit unusual. It was a group of people and came together and just kind of had these fundamental realizations around the idea that, like I said earlier, our money's not working for us anymore. And it feels like crypto is the technology to try and solve this and put our money back to work for us. You know, and I remember in 2012, 2013, 2014, somewhere around there when we were doing the Stanford Bitcoin group, the Cypriot banking system collapsed and everyone in Cyprus took a haircut on their bank accounts and lost a bunch of money. And it was this crazy event. And it was a huge catalyst for the early Bitcoin community because we were looking at it and we're like, wow, this seems broken, right? Like these people, normal everyday citizens, had money in a bank account because they were told to leave money in a bank account. And one day they just had less money in their bank account because their government mismanaged the economy and took money out of everyone's bank accounts to compensate for that. And that's really scary. And we think something better could exist. And so in 2017, ECO got started, and it was a group of people that started it. The two full-time co-founders that have been working on the project ever since it got started are Ryan Sachs and Henry Alt, who are co-founders in the business and did a remarkable job building it and kind of doing the R&D phase and building this thing out in the early days and created many of the foundational ideas. And then I'd been involved from the very beginning as a founding advisor and had helped kind of bring people into the business. But in 2020, I left CoinList to take over as CEO at ECO and kind of gear it up for the next phase. And so that's how it all came together.
Yeah, it's a very crypto beginning in that it's a project and has kind of scaled from there.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating that today you're expanding into things like rewards, which is actually a really interesting idea. Last time I talked to you, you hinted at rewards, but said you couldn't talk much about it yet. Can you talk about EcoPoints and what you're building?
What we've come to understand, I think, is that in the long run, open systems win. So what do I mean by an open system? An open system is something where it's not a walled garden. It's kind of an open standard, an open movement of the thing in the system. And the way I kind of describe this with respect to reward systems is that Amex points and Chase points, you earn them, but American Express and Chase can devalue them whenever they want. You're living in their world, right? Like you may have signed up for the Chase Sapphire Reserve and earned 100,000 signup points. They decide how much those 100,000 signup points are worth. And because you can't leave with your points, you can't walk away with your Chase points. Your Chase points are in Chase. Because you can't walk away, they can do whatever they want. They have total control over the system and you have no ability to change anything. So there's really no check on them. There's no check on what they can do. And it leads to this perverse incentive where their incentive, it's not malicious, but their incentive is give you however many points it takes to get you to do something that they want you to do. And then as soon as you have those points, devalue them as quickly as possible. They've already gotten you to do the thing, so just devalue them. And the way to fix that, we think, is to build an open rewards currency, one where you can leave with your points and take them somewhere else. It's an open system. It's not a closed system. It's an open one. And what that means is that there's now a disincentive for the issuer, the person who gave you the points, to do anything malicious. Because if you could bring Chase points anywhere, if you could walk away with them and take them somewhere else, and Chase said one day, hey, your points are now worth half of what they once were, you would say, okay, great. I'm going over here with my points. And, you know, I'm not going to be a part of your ecosystem anymore. And so what we're seeking to build is an open system rewards currency, where eco points, we think of them as kind of the first pro-social rewards layer for the internet. Eco points can be brought anywhere and used anywhere. And that open system encourages good behavior. And eventually, we hope to make the system increasingly governed by the people that actually use it to bring into alignment with their best interest. So that's what we're building with points at a very high level.
So if I can take my points and leave with them and then go use them somewhere else, and you can't devalue them, so they're fundamentally pegged to the dollar or stable at some amount, call it a dollar, how are they different than dollars or like USDC, a stable token?
Yeah. So they are not, eco points are not worth anything today. They're not pegged to anything. And I think what's important about that is that Chase points aren't pegged to anything. Mm-hmm. The reason they're worth something in your mind is because Chase allows you to redeem them for certain things. That's what makes them valuable.
Ah.
So we may allow you to redeem eco points for certain things, whatever, experiences, opportunities, access, products, doesn't really matter. It's not pegged to any specific value, but we can allow you to redeem them for things and so can other people. And a devaluation is not actually saying this thing that was once worth this is now worth this. It's saying this redemption opportunity now costs twice as much, right? That's what a devaluation is. It's when American Airlines says, oh, that one-way flight, it used to cost 10,000 American Airlines miles, but now it costs 20,000. They didn't kind of change the pegged value of the point. They just changed how much is required to redeem. And so that's the system we've set up, is that, you know, we'll eventually allow you to redeem these points for all sorts of things. So will other people. And if we ever change what we allow you to redeem points for at Eco, you'll just go redeem them somewhere else. Because why would you redeem them at Eco if the redemption is not a valuable one or not a sense?
And why would, like, say Starbucks or American Airlines allow me to redeem Eco points in exchange for products?
It's a great question. You will not see redemption options at American Airlines tomorrow for Eco points. It's not going to happen because they have this incentive. They've got a closed system. What we would argue is that in the long run, open systems win, and they become overwhelmingly demanded by consumers and people end up accepting them. So I actually expect redemptions for Eco points to start with smaller niche communities that benefit from being a part of this network. That's how these things start. You benefit from being a part of the network and having points move around and be redeemed in different places. And eventually so many people demand it that larger and larger and larger entities need to accept them. And I think the forward thinking ones realize that sooner rather than later, and they end up making moves to participate in this new system sooner and get the benefits of participating sooner. But at the end of the day, it's about building momentum and about building consumer demand before anything else.
I mean, it reminds me a lot of a social token or even Bitcoin. And it's a thing, you put it out in the world. But I guess the question is it backed by a token? And is there a finite amount of it? And who creates them? Do you create them, Eco?
Yeah, so right now, and this is kind of the area for exploration for us, like, what does this look like in the future? And what's the best way to actually achieve this vision of your money working for you and a true open system rewards currency? Right now we make all of it, but we're pretty transparent about it and just like the process of how it's earned and what it looks like and handing it out to people. Eco points are earnable in the app for doing all sorts of things. But what we also have is the ability to earn points across the internet. So for example, on Twitter, you can actually earn Eco points on Twitter for doing things. And we've set up a system where you can earn points on Twitter. And that's an early demonstration of what it means for an open system to exist. Because once you receive points on Twitter, you can send them to someone else. You can send them to someone else. They can move around and people can even trade points for different things if they want to. And so for us, it's all about just kind of spreading that at first and then seeing how it evolves over time and what that ends up looking like.
It's almost an experiment with a new kind of currency. And when you print a new kind of currency on paper, to use a non-crypto metaphor, it's not necessarily worth anything until maybe it is, and it's used as a unit of exchange. But you're fundamentally targeting businesses and things like that as that unit of exchange and kind of couching it as a rewards token, because that is where tokens might be most interesting down the line, yeah, you think.
And we do genuinely think of it as a rewards currency, because that is how it works. And yeah, I think that these things, like, you create them and you see how the community uses them and what they end up evolving into. And that's the most interesting way to do it. What's really compelling is we are coupling that. We just spent a whole bunch of time talking about these points. Where we started the conversation was on this consumer financial product. Mm-hmm. And so what matters for us is that we're doing both of those things together. Because if we created these points without that product, if we just kind of were like, hey, everyone, rewards points. Do you want rewards points? Like, there's no foundation for that. But because we're coupling that with this really engaged user base, earning it for good reason on this compelling financial product, that then gives people a reason to believe and bet on these things. It's kind of like we've created the first business that is a participant in this open reward system. And now other people can do it as well, benefiting from the existence of our user base, instead of us just creating a reward system and then going to people and saying, hey, do you want to be the first people to use our reward system, which would not be terribly effective.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, what if Chase or Amex, which they never would, but what if they open sourced their points so anyone could tap into them and use them for different things and potentially even issue them and things like that?
And I do think it's a classic kind of innovator versus incumbent, where in order for them to do it, they would have to cannibalize their existing business model, right? Those are always the hardest changes for incumbents to make in any industry, is one that says, in order to make this leap to this new world, we have to cannibalize our existing business model. And they just really can't do that. And what we're able to do is come in and say, actually, this is core to our business model. And that gives us an advantage in moving much faster and executing on it, and allows us to go and build this thing in a way that they just simply can't.
The last section on the show always is a lightning round. The first question is, what are the three most important things right now that have to happen over the next 6 months for Eco to really take off?
By the time this episode airs, we will have just announced our brand new website and app, which are game-changing in terms of how people understand money and visualize money and think about money. And we believe that visualization is key to understanding any abstract concept. And money is probably the greatest abstract concept of all. So one thing that has to happen is that has to hit. People have to understand that and love that. And we think that is foundational for what we're doing going forward, is this new way to see your money and then make decisions about your money. And so that new app and that new website, which we just rolled out, that will be really, really big. Another thing is the spread of this open reward system. And that's what we'll be spending a lot of, not so much the next 3 months, but kind of from 3 months from now, you know, maybe end of summer through the end of the year, spreading this open rewards currency and building an ecosystem around that and allowing that to take off. So we aren't the only business that's participating in this open rewards economy. And the third thing, I think, is just scaling and bringing more people on and inviting more people to experience all of this and growing the community around what we're doing, which is always something we need to do. But I think especially as we begin to scale that open rewards economy, building the community will be really important.
How did you think about designing the product to enable people to see money differently?
That is the entire topic of this virtual event that we hosted on May 17th. It's really interesting. We worked with a remarkable firm called Work & Co., who we think are the best product designers in the world. And we basically came with that prompt and said, how can we help people visualize the value of their money? And it took a lot of iterations, but we ended up settling on actually kind of a shape as the core innovation in all of this. The shape is a helix. And we've created this helix. I wish I had a graphic on screen that I could show you right over here or something, but we created a helix that represents your wealth. And you can see how changes in your behavior and changes that you make in your decisions about how you save, spend, send, make money actually affect your future in a really tangible way.
It's compounding. You like visualize compounding in a helix.
Which we are, as humans, we are not good at doing.
Yeah, it's really hard to see.
Really hard to see. And so we've worked really hard to try and create a way to make that visible and legible for people.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And something you'd think would actually be everywhere, like just a compounding graph, like even just the graph, not anything attached to it. And it's not. It's, if you don't know how to use Excel, it's hard to even find a compounding calculator online.
That's right. And even once you see that graph isn't even enough. Because it just feels so divorced from reality. It feels so kind of like abstract and made up. And you need to find a way to make it tangible for people and make it feel real. And that's a lot of what our efforts in design have centered on.
If you were starting from scratch, what would you have done differently?
We would have accelerated efforts to get to this kind of redesigned place. We operated with kind of an MVP level product for, I think, longer than we had to. We proved out that the thing worked and that people wanted to use it. And then we waited a long time to keep doing things before we stepped back and hit reset and really built the thing from the ground up the way it should have been built from the beginning. And I don't regret the MVP phase. I think that's critical. But I do wish that we, with the benefit of hindsight, we had pressed reset sooner once we had gotten confirmation of product market fit and that this thing worked, and then built it the way it should have been built. And I think we probably could have shaved at least a few months off to get that to happen faster.
Where would you like to see Eco in 10 years from now?
For me, it's less about where I would like to see Eco and more about where I would like to see the world. I think there is an insidious thing that's happened. Again, not malicious, but just kind of quietly has set in as a new reality that your money is not working for you. No matter what you do, your money's not working for you. It's working for other people. And that's because of every middleman and every transaction. That's because of how the financial system is set up and how infrastructure is set up and this kind of outdated technology that we all use to manage money. And I would like that to change. And I would like the new default in the world to be a world where your money is working for you, not for other people. I would like Eco to have played a part in creating that reality through things like a brand new, way better consumer financial product for managing your money all in one place, through things like an open rewards currency. Rewards that you've earned are wealth that you have, and it should be working for you, not for other people. And I would like to see a world where the default is money working for you, not for everyone else.
That is a fantastic vision. And Andy, I'm looking forward to seeing it come to life. Thanks for joining the show.
We're making it happen. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you having me.